I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome to The Stacks. My name is Tracy Thomas and I am your host here. Before we get started, I just wanted to say a quick thank you for everyone who listened to our first episode. I received so many comments, emails, text messages, and phone calls, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for reaching out. I'm so glad you guys are enjoying this so far, and I'm excited to be creating this podcast with all of you. So thank you. Also, if you have yet to, please subscribe to this podcast. If you're inclined, leave us a review, rate us. All of that really helps. Our website is thestackspodcast.com. And on that website, you'll be able to find all the places that our podcast is located: iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn. So it's all linked there. Also, on the website, you can leave us comments, suggestions for future books, questions, any thoughts or insights, any things that come up while listening to the podcast, leave it there. Or go to our Instagram, which is The Stacks Pod, and you can do the same thing there. Send us some DM or whatever. Slide into our DMs. Every episode at the end, I go back, I listen to the whole thing, I pull every single book, every single article we talked about, and I will link it in the show notes, and it will also be up on the website. So if you're really curious about a book you hear on the show, go back to the show notes, check it out, link it, find it, enjoy it. All right, let's get started this week. I'm back with Dallas Lopez. He is a high school English teacher in Los Angeles. He's an avid reader. He's an all-around smart and wonderful human. If you haven't listened to the first episode, you'll be able to get to know Dallas a little bit better by going back and listening to it. This week, we're going to be discussing our first The Stacks Book Club pick, which is Exit West by Mohsen Hamid. Before I say anything else, let me say this. This week, and every week we do a book club episode, there will be spoilers. We are going to spoil this book. So if you're planning on reading it, go ahead, pause, read the book, come back when you're done, then listen. I promise you we'll still be here and you'll probably enjoy the conversation a lot more once you know what we're talking about. So here's the deal. Exit West. It's a book about two young people who have just met and they start a relationship. They live in this country that is on the brink of a civil war, and they're forced to decide how they want to proceed. Do they stay home and face this new regime, or do they strike it out on their own? So Dallas and I are going to be diving deep into the themes and issues that come up in this book, some of which are the treatment of displaced people, the power of borders, and the biases that come with religion. We're also going to be talking about a lot of other stuff about the characters, about the writing style and all that. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our little conversation about Exit West by Mohsen Hamid. All right, Dallas, welcome back.
Thank you.
The Stacks Book Club, the first book club episode. I'm really excited. Our book that we picked is Exit West by Mohsen Amin. The book tells the story of, well, first of all, there will be spoilers on this episode.
Of course,
so if you have not read the book, pause the episode.
Pick it up.
Get the book. Read the book. Enjoy the book. Then when you finish and you want to talk to your best friend about it and you know your best friend has not read the book, come find us.
Exactly.
We'll be here. The Stacks Podcast.
Waiting for
you. We're waiting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now that you've read the book, congratulations. Didn't you love it? This book tells the story of two people, young people, leave their home because where they're from, the city that they're from, is under attack by militant humans. And they meet each other. They kind of have this spark and they decide, we got to go. And it basically tells their story of them traveling through the world together as kind of like new lovers, but also, you know, refugees from their home. This book touches on, I don't know, a billion, majillion things that the greatest books touch on. It talks about home and family and love and religion a little bit. And you know, what does it mean to be a stranger in your home? And what does it mean to be a stranger in a new place? And what does it mean to even have a home or, and all of that? So we're going to talk about all that. I guess we'll just start with, you know, what was your initial kind of response to the book?
Yeah, I mean, I ended it and I was like, oh, I want some more. But I think because of that, it left me thinking more than I might have if I had sort of this strong resolution.
Yeah.
I found myself actually, so I live in Hollywood and we have a large homeless population all over. And I found myself looking at someone who lives in a tent consistently on the street next to me thinking that, oh, you're more human to me right now.
Yeah.
And I think it was directly because of this text, this book here, that made me think that. And so I think it's really sort of stuck with me and has joined me as I'm sort of in my daily life.
Totally.
Yeah. What about you?
I really liked the book. When the book started, I was like, I don't know, fiction. I'm just like not a fiction person. You know this.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Everybody at home, you're going to find out. Mm-hmm. I'm just not really a fiction person. So I was a little bit nervous. But obviously I'd heard good things about it from, you know, Barack Obama let me know it's good. So it was on his list. I love him. So I picked it up and I was excited and I was like, oh, it's actually a lot smaller than I thought. Like maybe I'll be fine. And I started reading it and the writing is really, you know, stylized. It's like his sentence structure is really interesting and not that that's something that I normally care about or think about, but when it's done well, you can't help but notice it. So I was really pulled in by, it was almost like poetry, but it's not verse, you know, it's like, it was just like, kind of like sexy almost. I don't know. So I was like really pulled into it and the way, like, you know, there's moments in the book where he's telling you, you know, that's, well, I guess we're doing spoilers. So who do I care? The part where he tells us that Sade's mother has died and he kind of is like, and then that was the last time he saw her.
Right.
Because she had been killed. And I was like, yo, like this motherfucker is not playing around.
Right.
And I like that kind of writing really pulled me in because I couldn't zone out.
Right.
Like I had to pay attention to what was happening. And so I loved that about the book.
Yeah. The teacher in me definitely, when I read the first page, I'm always with my students like, we got to read that first page. Those first lines, like authors labor over them. Do not skip them. So I spent a lot of time with that first line. I just felt like I was really savoring it. It was just so.
What was it?
Now so I'm nice. Go look. I was just rereading it.
Read it
to
us.
Okay. I'll do a quick little read.
Okay.
But the sentence structure and the way that he sort of folds in all of these things and builds towards something is just really magical. And I just found myself being like, oh, my students should really see this right now. Starts in a city swollen by refugees, but still mostly at peace, or at least not yet openly at war. A young man met a young woman in a classroom and did not speak to her.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. It's like that, like there's so much in the text that I couldn't help but be engaged with it.
Right.
Because I sometimes feel like one of my problems with fiction is that I feel sometimes that authors are just like writing to write.
Mm-hmm.
And I like nonfiction because I want information.
Right.
And so this was kind of like you had to pay attention to the writing because it wasn't always the thing that you were interested in wasn't always at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a boy and a girl met each other in school in the city that they lived in. It was like this city and there's war and like, right. Sexy. I don't know.
And I also just love that moment where, you know, there's this thing where authors do this wonderful job of catching moments in life. And he definitely does that. There's so many times mm-hmm. where I was in my house and my couch reading and found myself looking at my couch differently or sort of thinking about my home differently.
Yeah.
But that moment where he says, and did not speak to her. Mm-hmm. Oh, like we don't often think about the things that we don't do as like memorable moments. And so I just thought like this is already something special. This is already something that I'm it's teaching me something about the world that I don't normally do, that those moments that we don't do are still something, mm-hmm. you know?
I totally agree. The book does definitely feel like it does feel special as you're reading it. Mm. Kind of to jump to the end.
Oh, yeah.
Just because about this, how did you feel about the last third of the book? Not the details of it, but like how did you like if you felt really engaged from that first page, yeah. did that change when you got to the end?
It did a little. I was you kind of I guess we'd done this well. I mean, you kind of sense that this whole time that there's this tension between them and they're going to break up or mm-hmm. something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think it was going to happen. Mm. I kind of felt like part of the story that they were sort of experienced this thing together and that they're going to mm-hmm. end it together. And so when they ended it apart, I was kind of like scrambling for like,
yeah.
wait, what are you doing? No. So I felt myself kind of feeling not disappointed, but just feeling kind of like a kid with his two parents. I feel like I had gone through this whole journey and be like, no, I want you to be together. But then stepping back and thinking about, well, what's that togetherness about? And we have this togetherness, the idea of home and family. But when you don't have those concrete things anymore, then you do have more liberty and freedom to engage in the world and have people come in and come out in certain ways that we don't necessarily get to in our society.
Well, okay. So for me, I felt like the book really fizzled out. Like I was really into it. I was really enjoying it. I was like, you know, telling everybody, oh my God, I'm reading the best book ever. You have to read it, when I was like 50 pages in, which is common for me. But then by the time I got to the end of the book, I was like, what happened? Like, this just like everything ends. Like it's over. Like, goodbye. And I was really upset. And I actually talked to my sister-in-law, Robin. She's the best. And she was reading the book at the same time. And I was like, I don't know. It just fizzled. And she was like, well, I think that like that's what he was trying to say about, you know, the human spirit and these things. So then I thought about it and I, you know, went back and I found this passage. And I think that this passage sums it up better than anything that I'm going to say right now, because you know, he's a genius and I'm me. So this is what he says. He says, the apocalypse appeared to have arrived and yet it was not apocalyptic, which is to say that while the changes were jarring, they were not the end. And life went on and people found things to do and ways to be and people to be with, and plausible, desirable futures began to emerge. Unimaginable previously, but not unimaginable now. And the result was something not unlike relief, which then when you start to think about that passage, that's the relationship, that's their crisis, that's their country, that's all these people, like that's London, that's Marin, that's wherever they end up. At first, it seems like, how could we possibly go on? You know, my mother's died, I've left my father, this is the end of the world. And yet things that seemed unimaginable before, like laughing, all of a sudden they do, or like, you know, leaving the house, or, you know, and so it's maybe not so much a fizzle, but it's just a coming to terms. And same with a relationship. You enter a relationship, you're like, oh my God, I'm so in love with him. I'm going to marry him. And then 6 months later, you're like, this is lovely. And, you know, if you're me, you're married 3 years and you're like, great. we fully fizzled. My husband and I have fully fizzled. He's gonna hear this and think that I'm a terrible person. We love you, Jake. Yeah. You're the most perfect.
I mean, I love that idea. I mean, that's so profound and so lovely in so many ways, and things that I would want my students to be able to come to. but I think that makes me love the book more. I think that I had the same experience where I'm getting towards the middle of the book and I'm thinking, well, what's going to happen? What's happening? And then, like nothing quite happens in the way that it does in the beginning. And so I think that that idea that maybe he organized the organization of this text was for that, you know,
right.
to mirror the way in which relationships or even just these huge chaotic moments of right. war, you know, that's not the end.
Right.
It is a beginning of something else.
Right. Well, and it's the end for some people, but those who survive, sure, like,
the end for some.
They are more resilient and like things that were unimaginable before are not.
And that we've created something else from it, right?
Right.
That you would think at the end of those sayings there would be an end, but there's not, that there's this other sort of segment of history that begins.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And something also, like, you and I both are bleeding heart kind of people. And
say?
Like, well, what I was going to say is that even for the nativists in this story, things that were once unimaginable, like right. having these migrants, having these refugees in their mm-hmm. places, also kind of like, by the time they get to Marin, it's kind of like, oh yeah, these people just live here. And he even says something along the lines of like, well, who is even from here?
Right.
Like nobody's even from
Marin. That's where I was like, wait a second.
Right. And so it's like, even for everybody in the book, these things, these cataclysmic events, it's like, oh my God, there's all these other people in London and we have to,
yeah.
you know, burn this movie theater down filled with children to kill them, to get them out. And then by the end, it's like, no, we gave them like this plot of land and like they do their own thing. And like, even for those people that yeah. like are the villains, I can speak for myself, are the villains in my mind,
yeah.
even they come to terms and like even they right. soften or.
It's true. Yeah.
And that to me, I guess, is what makes this book more special than the story that it tells. It's like, there is this bigger story about what does it mean to go through a trauma and to survive, right? Because not everybody survives.
No, I mean, I think that's a good point. But I think that, yeah, I think that those things are so important. You know, I often ask my students to think about literature as this, as a hope for what could be or what mm-hmm. else is out there. And I think that this does that in such an interesting way, because you look at things like Marin County, and if you're not from the West Coast or anything, like, that's a pretty wealthy part of the world.
Super.
You know, and there's one line when you said that, I remember him saying like, oh, like the rich people or the people who are like have a lot live in San Francisco,
yeah.
where, you know, Marin County is kind of like
right.
not that. And I was like, well, since when?
Since this book was written.
Right. But it does this really magical thing. And the same thing you're saying in London is that you think about these places that like are safe, quote unquote safe,
mm-hmm.
from anything else from being there besides what is decided should be there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These are wealthy places. These are things that like they either have gates or sort of like metaphorical gates.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's so powerful that he messes with that. That
right.
protection we think we feel as Americans or as other people in our neighborhoods because we may or may not have money,
right,
is shifted here.
Right.
And it's, you almost can't imagine it in here. And then you think, oh, well, it does. It can. And it right. will. You know?
Well, and just this is kind of like a little bit of a departure, but it ties in.
Mm.
So the way that Saeed and Nadia and all of these refugees, migrants, mm-hmm. whichever you prefer, I guess.
He's
interchangeable.
Yeah.
yeah. But the way that they get places
door
is through these doors.
Yeah.
And these doors are, you walk in and you end up somewhere else. So unlike how things work in our current world, where you have to travel somewhere by land or plane or sea or whatever, but mostly in refugee migrant situations, it's by land.
Right.
You're able to be cordoned off or put in undesirable places. Whereas in this book, you walk through a door and you end up somewhere. When they go to London, they end up in a rich person's home who wasn't in town. And all yeah. of a sudden there's all these people there. So this book is positioning refugees and migrants and undesirables, quote unquote, in the places where people want to be, right? Like, they're not ending up in South London. Not that I even know what that means. Like, that was a horrible thing to say because I don't know anything about South London.
Okay.
I just said that because it sounded like, you know, in America, like South, whatever, it's like
right.
that. But whatever. They don't end up on the outskirts of a city in a country, like
oh,
right
yeah.
on the border. They're in the heart of London in these, like, I think they say they're in like a palace.
Right. Some sort of mansion.
And that's different because now you have people that are unwanted in places that people want to be.
Yeah. It's And that's where the power lies. Maybe as we're reading these things, we're mm-hmm. like waiting for a climax, but it's mm-hmm. really these things that these are moments. Around us all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember walking the streets of New York City where mm-hmm. you went to school and you mm-hmm. lived for a while. And I was with my friend. I was in grad school. And we were just looking about all these buildings thinking like, oh, it'd be so wonderful if we know someone's not living there. A lot of them are empty because people just, you know, travel right. a bunch. Why couldn't they let us stay there? There's people who are living in closets of rooms, right? Mm-hmm. And it does this in this story where right. you have this giant home. And in the United States, we are have been, hopefully we're moving away from that, this attracted these giant homes mm-hmm. that don't have a purpose. And so you see it's these homes that are vacant starting to get purpose through refugees right. who need them and need right. – who feel that the ability to have just a room with a door that right. can close – is everything.
Right. You know? And they have access to these spaces, which normally, currently, refugees do not have access, yeah. no access whatsoever. So yeah, it is. That is the power of this book, is like these moments of, yo, that's not real. Like,
right.
But it's real in this world. And the rules of this world are very clear, which I appreciate. Mm. Because I think that it allowed me to believe mm-hmm. and to follow through. Because one of the things that I generally don't love about like science fiction or magical realism mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call this book is that sometimes the rules aren't clear enough. And right. I'm like, I don't believe that. Like, yeah, that's not maybe. Real life. Right. But this, I felt like this was real life, but just maybe like in the future. I don't know. Like, I was like, sure. Like, I know Marin. Like, I've been to London. Right. Like, I know these places.
Yeah. It's like this really narrow opening. And it's like he somehow writes about this in such a way that you can go with him on this, you know, unbelievable journey through doors that lead you to other mm-hmm. places in the world. But you can still go along with this ride where it's believable that you can look at your own world and reflect and see where is the absurdity in our own sort right. of like space.
Right.
So it's a really delicate balance he brings to the text.
And yeah,
I'm totally. So glad we're talking about this book. I'm enjoying it more and more.
You're like into
it's
it.
It's not fizzling anymore. It's like
you can't see Dallas bubbled. Right now, but he's like into it. And Dallas isn't always like into things sometimes. He like looks yeah. at me with like, stop it, you're done. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal, and trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, so one of the things that we've just been talking about a ton is all these places, right? We talked about London, Marin, yes. Mykonos. But the thing that happens in this book, which is another like, you're a genius and we're idiots, and why do I want these basic things when you're giving me life, is that we're never told where Nadia and Syed are from. We're never told the city, the country, nothing.
Yes.
So what did you think? Where did you go? Like, where did your mind go?
I mean, honestly, I didn't even think about it. Something had just popped into my head immediately. I didn't even like have to articulate it. But then as I went forward and they're visiting all these places, I realized, wait, where are they from? And I had no idea because I couldn't find it. But in my head, I thought they were possibly in Afghanistan or Iraq or something. But I realized I wasn't able to find out where, and I didn't know
totally.
Why.
Totally. So. Yeah, and it's interesting because he does name a lot of places. He also names where other refugees are from. Like, he's like, I remember like people from Thailand, which I was like, interesting. Uh-huh. I thought Syria, and I thought maybe Turkey.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is because Nadia wears a robe, and Syed prays a bunch, and like they talk a lot about religion, so like it felt Muslim. But even now, as I'm saying that, I'm like, I guess it could have been. There's so many places where there are Muslim people. Like they could have been from Asian countries, or they could have been from African countries, or I mean, I guess conceivably they could have been from America, right? Like they could have been Muslims living in America. Like there's nothing that says that it's not, I guess, not that. It's just not where my mind goes. But I thought that was interesting because I think that it really puts a mirror up in front of you, right? You could be living somewhere at any time and you could be living a life that you think is normal. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's a shift in the thinking or a shift in the power of the country or the city or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're not safe anymore and you can't walk to school. And you now it's not that you choose to wear a robe like Nadia, but you actually have to now, right? Like, so that was interesting. I don't know. Why do you think he tell us?
I mean, I'm super interested to see what your listeners are going to say.
Yeah.
Because this is part of what I love about being a teacher is that you hear a student say something and you think, whoa, I never thought of that. So I'm so excited to see what
where you're excited to see what they think, where they think they're from or why they think they're from.
Both. Where and why.
Message Dallas. I'll post all his social media so you can harass him.
Please though. yeah, I mean, I like that idea that the reason there's no place is because it's universal. Like you're saying, it could happen to any of us. This could be any of our places. And I just kind of thought it was also difficult to name a place because, as you said, this could be Africa, this could be other places, that there are lots of places in which these practices happen or in which, you know, Muslim and prayer happens throughout the day. And so I thought part of the reason why you couldn't name it is because there's lots of places where this has happened, where war has broken out or civil wars or these other things, you know, and that it's important to acknowledge those things. But as you're saying as well, that it could be any of us.
Right.
Any of our places that we think are free from. Because the way you hear his parents talk about things, you realize that this was a place of safety,
right.
Of comfort.
Well, his parents are professors, right? They're teachers. Right. And I don't know.
Stability.
Yeah. I don't even know if the book actually says that they're Muslim. He just asks, do you pray? I just put that on, I think.
Wow.
I think I just assumed.
And those are that's really interesting, the things that we assume as readers. Or at least I'm assuming.
Well, we assume them, but also, I mean,
there's some clues.
We assume them, but it wasn't like out of thin air. But maybe it was. I don't know.
Can we talk about something real quick?
Yes, go ahead.
So I was so in love and fascinated by his parents.
Obsessed.
Yes.
When his mom died, I was like, wait, I want more of this woman. Yeah.
Like, I was like, you can't die because there's got to be some more. But like, there is that moment where he's writing. There's this like moment, and this comes back to his sentences and the ways he's able to write sentences. But he writes about how when the first time they were together and how much sex they had that night, even though she wasn't she felt uncomfortable, didn't feel comfortable, so she did it more.
Right.
You know, in order to understand. But then it talks about where they were at their last anniversary and how they had sex once the entire year. And, you know, he's able to jump time.
Right.
And there's a wonderful way in his sentences that I just fell in love with. But right. I just love that moment where they're outside. They love to read like us. And nice. They're outside reading. And she hates that he smokes, or at least she does not smoke. Mm-hmm. And then he puts down the cigarette and she lifts it up and takes a drag and puts it back. And I just thought that this moment between partners or people that you have relationships with and those little moments that matter to you of peace was just so magically captured and just made them so real to me that, you know, when it came time to her dying, I was like, no, you know?
Yeah. And it's, there's such minor characters as far as time in the book, and yet they really do feel like really special. Like if there's a movie, you know, the mom and daughter being nominated for Best Supporting Actor, even though, you know, it's like Michelle Williams in Manchester by the Sea. She was on the movie for 30 seconds, but she got nominated. Don't see it. Spoiler, it's not good.
Yeah.
But like these little parts, he creates these little humans that feel so real.
Right.
For these moments, and when they leave the dad, I'm like, no, like, I love him, and yeah, I agree. I just really loved the parents, and they also kind of set up a foil for Nadia and Saeed, right? Like, she is this, you know, sexual, like, she mirrors the mother. She's sexual. Yeah. She's, you know, upfront. She's in your face, and the dad is kind of a little bit more calm and focused, and the prayer and all that like really connects. Yeah. And, you know, Said says later in the book, he prays because it feels like a connection back to his father and that whole thing. And, you know, they're not having sex seems like such a thing, especially because early in the book, we hear about his parents' sex life so early on. So it's like these things are set up in contrast to one another.
Right. Yeah. It does. And it's almost as if, it's almost as if this is what they could have had had they got to experience home and these other things that
not
they didn't
because
trauma. They travel through all these places as refugees or
And like what do these traumas or these major life events, what do they do to a relationship, right? Like,
I love that. Yeah.
I mean, that to me is like such a huge part of this book is like they meet and they're really into each other. And he talks about how they're texting each other and they've inserted inserted themselves into each other's lives through these texts. So it gets to a point where they can't imagine not texting and then the phones don't work. It's like they don't talk for 3 days, right? And it's like these things, they disrupt the patterns of your life.
Yeah.
So what if, right? Like you're left with a major what if by the time the book ends and you're rooting for them. I was.
Yeah. I mean, I was rooting for them too. You want them to sort of stick it out, you know? But I also just thinking about that makes me think, you know, I don't understand fully. I mean, maybe not even a smidgen of what it means to be a refugee because I live in such security comfort and safety, you know. And I think that part of what this does is violate that in the text, in the book, and something that I still, as a Westerner, get to enjoy, you know, and I don't understand those things. And so I think part of maybe what the discussion, the dialogue that he's having with people is that, you know, if you're in a Brexit moment, or if you're in this place where you're German and you don't want any more, you know, refugees coming in, or you're in the United States and you want to build walls, you know.
Super helpful.
It seems to be a little bit because we don't understand. And part of what's in that moment when they're in London and you see this buildup, like, you know, as you were saying, they burned down a theater with children in it at one point. They being the UK nativists. And the nativists, those who are from the UK. And then it stops, and everyone's sort of waiting for it to pick back up. The refugees are waiting for it to sort of like get worse, and then it doesn't. And I wonder if that's a moment where they're so upset that their safety and security and way of life has been violated that they're trying to do all they can to get it back. And maybe at some point they realize, like, oh, I understand this person across from me I'm trying to kick out or whatever. And in that, they try to find a solution. It's not their greatest solution. But, you know, I think that's something I'm missing. I'm missing that understanding.
Right. You know? Like, how do we respond and embrace these people who are...
Who are going through this. Because as you were saying, like, when we look at their moms, the mom and dad, and then we look at their relationship, and we think, this is what you could have had if you lived in this sort of realm of safety. And then...
Right.
Refugees don't get to sort of enjoy the things that we get to, you know?
Well, and all of their relationships are built in this time of struggle or trauma or whatever. Like, imagine raising a kid.
Yeah,
like,
and we don't get to enjoy what is that they're experiencing. Because, you know, there's their ability, these two characters, to meet others and to grow strength and to be adaptable and these other things that I'm not always.
Yeah. You know? They're better with people than you and I. No, that's totally true. And so another thing that's really comes up in this book is that we don't really discuss anybody's feelings. I don't know if you notice that. Wow. Like, as we're traveling through the doors and as we're, you know, waiting for the Londoners to come and burn down the house. And as we're leaving our father at home in our unnamed country, there isn't a lot of talk about, and then Syed felt this, and then Nadia felt this. Okay. And it's interesting because as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, I would be so scared or I would be so sad. Mm-hmm. And it was just an interesting thing because our feelings, as one of my coworker says, feelings aren't facts. And they aren't facts, but they are really real for you. Whether or not they're valuable is a totally separate thing, but they're not discussed really in this book. I don't know if you noticed that or if that resonates with you at all.
I will be honest, I didn't notice that, but I think that there's some validity to that because I hear you say that and think, ooh. Yeah, there were some moments where like, his mom dies, and it's kind of like, yeah, she died. And there's some moments where you kind of sense, but there's not this inner dialogue or feelings where we can. Right. It's not the same when we're reading The Little Life. And we're like, oh my.
Right. God. And he feels sad. Right.
Like, I'm not crying because the writing or the characters are making me cry because of what they're revealing. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked it because I want to feel what I want to feel.
Yeah.
You know? And like, then we're able to, I guess, put what we want to put on these moments. How would I feel if my mom died suddenly? How would I feel if I had to leave my father behind? How would I feel if I met a preacher's daughter and started having feelings for her?
Right?
Like, that's like such an interesting moment in the book towards the end in Marin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, I definitely thought about it because I didn't notice it. And normally I notice it because I'm like, oh, well, I wouldn't be feeling that way. Like, why did the author say that this character felt that, you know? And I didn't have that kind of combative experience with these moments because they were kind of able to just live, I guess, in the book.
Yeah. You're able to insert your own feelings or with not, then you're not being put off by these excessive or effusive feelings. You're like, I don't really believe you.
Yeah. No, but totally. Okay. Wait, I want to go back to one other thing.
Okay. Yeah.
If this book becomes a movie, it's okay. Sometimes we bump things in the studio, and by studio, I mean my living room. We're brand new. This is my second episode. Like,
you used
relax.
To see my face when I was like,
yeah, ah. Dallas feels so guilty. Listen, you've all listened to a brand new podcast. This is in the New York Times. Not yet.
It's about to be.
It will be. Anyways. Okay. Here we go. This book, Exit West, super popular. I sense a film coming on. Who do you cast in the film? If anybody. First of all, do you think it would make a good movie?
I think it would make a great movie. I think the budget would have to be huge.
Sure. Why not? Disney, you're doing great. Black Panther was a hit. You got a little extra money.
Yeah. I love playing this game. This is such a fun game, especially game. From Hollywood. I don't know if people outside of
when you live in LA, you're obsessed with celebrities. Even though when you move to LA, you're like not into them.
It's true.
And I don't know anybody's name, so this is going to be really fun. You're going to hear me typing like.
I was like, oh, that one person, and I was like, I can't say that on air right now. So,
well, it's hard because we have to place them right. Like you have to decide where they're from.
Right.
I mean, obviously, I'm obsessed with Riz Ahmed, so, like, can he please play Saeed? Because, like, what a babe.
For sure. I just a quick caveat. I mean, it's also just kind of difficult. I'm having difficulty finding and naming some people who are not of the white color. Because
we don't know their names because representation matters. And if you're listening from Disney, you should make the movie, but you should also help us find more actors of color. Yeah. And producers.
And us as listeners, we should try to find more films and stuff from the Middle East or these other places that we don't necessarily
watch. Disney, don't make the movie. Let somebody else make it.
Yeah.
You jerks. Riz Ahmed comes to my mind. Yeah. I don't know. Nadia's got to be kind of sexy and
strong.
And
right?
Strong.
Did you or do you not love the moment where she's like, do you pray?
Oh,
and
yeah.
You could tell he was like squirming.
Yeah.
He's like, not really. And she goes, I do not. And then she gets on that motorcycle. And I was like, ooh.
She reminds me of me a little bit, except for the motorcycle, because I'm risk averse. But she does kind of remind me of like myself.
Can
in
we
that.
Cast you?
Yeah, sure. Totally.
Yeah.
I'm available. call my agent. No, but she does have that like very, almost like Western, what we think of like Western women, right? That they're able to be like in your face.
Yeah.
Like that idea that like, women who are oppressed aren't able to have spunky personalities, right? Like that they're all demure. Right. And that's kind of what's great about her is that both of us pictured this book taking place in, a Muslim majority country.
Right.
And yet you have this kind of spitfire character. And he's really saying like, just because you can't see our women or these women because they're in robes doesn't mean that they're not as dynamic and diverse in personality as women anywhere else. Right. And so she is the one who's like, she wears the robe because she doesn't want guys like feeling her up, right. And like, she's like, I'm wearing this robe because I don't want to fuck with you. Like, she's like, I do not want to be a hashtag me too. Uh-huh. I want to be Nadia and I'd rather be in this robe away from you than have you catcalling me on the street. Right.
Yeah. And I think what's so powerful and brilliant about her as a character is that she knows how the culture works or the dominant culture. And she knows how to use that in the way that she needs to use it.
And how she gets seen.
Right. And I think that's where I'm like, ooh, you're like on a whole nother level as a person or a character.
But then there's the part where she's in the bank going to get her money. I don't know if you remember the scene, but she's like, it's like a crush of people and she gets really heavily groped, even though she's fully in her robe and she's fully in her protection. Like, it's kind of like, nobody cares. Yeah. Like, you're in these moments, you are as expendable as anyone else. And I don't know, maybe it's grosser than that, but.
Yeah, but it's also interesting because it's also the multiple amounts of clothes she has on that stops it too, because there's nothing that
she is protected, but she wasn't protected from the assault.
Right.
She's protected from any like, penetration, but she's still violated.
That's true. And that's still a violation. So
Yeah. The book is like that all the way through. There's just so many layers of things where it's like he lays this layer about the robe. Then he lays this layer about her personality. Then he lays this layer about the assault. And then it's like, but it was protected by the robe that circles back to the beginning. You know what I mean? It's like, you're like, yo. And the book is like 200 pages also. It's so short.
And she never loses the robe in the end, right?
She never takes it off.
Has it.
No.
And so I think that's a really interesting, because it doesn't serve. At some points, it says how, it actually is distracting and causing people to maybe treat her differently.
Right.
She's still, that's a really interesting thing that she still holds on to at the end. So.
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't pick a person to play her, but the more I think about you have one?
I have one.
Okay, go.
I don't know if it's cheating,
no,
but I was thinking Fella.
Okay. We have this, the most lovely friend. She's an actress.
Yeah.
Her name is Vella Lavelle. She is in The Big Sick. Mm-hmm. She's on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. She's a very good friend of mine from college, so disclaimer. But she's also a fantastic actress. She went to Juilliard. She went to NYU. Like, she's not just my friend. She's a superhero. Right. But she is a spitfire. And if you've seen The Big Sick, she plays the girlfriend that Camille That his parents want him to be with twice. She's in two scenes and she's amazing. Or she plays Heather on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. But that's a great one.
Yeah.
That's a I mean, of course, Bella, have your people call my people. I'm working with Disney. No, but also I was thinking, what if this city that they're from is a more cosmopolitan place than we're thinking? Like more, less homogenous, you know? More like a London where there's all sorts of different people, or more like an LA or a place where there's all sorts of different people. So maybe, you know, it's a cosmopolitan city center and maybe they're both the same religion, but it's not necessarily the religion of the place. And then you could really have a super diverse cast, right? Like his parents. I mean, I don't necessarily think that the text supports that, only because later on when he meets the preacher's wife or the preacher's daughter, it's very clear that the preacher is black and that the wife is from the place and is of the culture of Syed. So he's from a place maybe that it, I don't know. I just am thinking like you really could do anything because there aren't rules. You could have a person of color and you could have a Caucasian person if you so chose. You could have, you know, a black Muslim. You could have an Asian. Like there's just or it doesn't have to be Muslim. We're so set on this Muslim thing. But I just there's like I don't know. You could just cast someone fucking badass and just be done with it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. So I don't know. I just, I think, I do think it would make a good movie. So I am interested. I hope that it happens. I'm glad I read the book first.
Yeah. I hope he writes the screenplay.
I hope he writes the screenplay.
The best.
Yeah. Cause that would be beautiful. I mean, do you have anything else you want to say about this book or any other things that you want to talk about that we didn't get to?
I mean, the only thing that I always do is I try to think about the title. So what did you think about Exit West?
I mean, I guess they move west. I never really think about the title. That's so funny. I'm the opposite. I should, mental note, think about the title with guests. They move west.
Right.
They exit through doors because they don't really go back. So in with the doors, if you go out, you got to come back. If you come back through the door, you go back to where you came from.
Okay.
So, you know, like they were saying in Mykonos, the first place they go, it's like they're so scared, but what are they going to do? Go back to home?
Yeah. And it's hard because the doors are getting shut.
Yeah. And protected. And there's gatekeepers or doorkeepers or whatever. So I guess, yeah, they do move west, Mykonos to London to Marin.
Yeah. I was also just thinking
You go. I think you have an idea.
I was thinking, I was thinking now. I was thinking that, you know, what we have, the notions of west kind of are gone. You know, so I think maybe the idea of like West is exiting, you know, and that there is no longer this idea we have of the East or the West or the South. Like it seems like all of these things that were maybe have been pushed to the South or pushed to the East, right, then are no longer bound by those boundary lines anymore.
Sure.
And so we don't have that notion of Westness or Western civilization.
Right. But it's just all that's gone.
Yeah.
By exited.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. I'm like, now I'm like, I should have thought about the title.
Well, I mean, this is another place where hopefully the listeners got some
good, tell us what you thought about the title or what you think the title means.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Dallas.
Tracy.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun. Dallas is my first ever guest. I will link to everything and anything we talked about on this episode on the website. And of course we want to hear from you. Mm-hmm. Dallas really wants to hear from you. I'm not sure if I want to hear from you yet because I've read comments on some websites. And so please be generously kind.
We're starting out.
Yeah.
Or
so
you're starting out.
I'm starting out. Yes. But so here's the deal. Next episode, I'm going to have Sarah Fong on. She is a PhD student at, USC and she's a good friend of mine. We grew up together in the Bay Area. And we're going to be talking about Jessamyn Ward's The Men We Reap. So go ahead, get your copy for that. I'm super excited about this one. I bought it. I've been holding on to it. I keep not reading it. And it's my next one and I can't wait to start. So check it out. Jessamyn Ward. She wrote Sing Unburied Sing, which was also on Barack Obama's list from 2017.
How did you find it?
But this is not that book. This is a memoir. So check it out. It's called The Men We Reap. And we will be back in 1 week from today. Thanks so much, Dallas. All right, y'all, that does it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next Wednesday, April 18th, with our guest, Sarah Fong, a PhD student in ethnic studies. The following week, Wednesday, April 25th, she and I are going to be discussing Jessamyn Ward's Men We Reaped. It's a fantastic book, so make sure you pick up your copy, read it. and get ready to talk about it April 25th. Also, of course, subscribe to this podcast, rate us, review us, tell your friends about us. Every little bit helps, so we appreciate anything you're willing to do. Everything we talked about today and in any future podcast will always be found in the show notes. Also, that will be up online on our website, www.thestackspodcast.com. You can find links to our Instagram and our Facebook there. So follow us, message us, reach out, let us know what you're thinking. We're so excited to hear from you. So please don't be shy. Lastly, I just wanted to say thank you to Dallas Lopez, Shane Clark, Robin McCrite, Jake Casey, and Aaron Dolores. Our theme music is by Tagarajas, and this show is created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will see you in the stacks.